I'm Dorothy Wickenden. On this week's Politics and More podcast, The New Yorker's Evan Osnos talks to Anna Galland, the executive director of MoveOn.org. Galland and her organization are gearing up to oppose the Trump administration, even as they're beginning to plan for the 2020 election.
Now, having lost the White House, both houses of Congress, and the chance for a Supreme Court justice, the Democrats have quite a task ahead if they're going to matter in Washington at all. And meanwhile, a lot of liberal voters are feeling confused, angry, and adrift. One of the people who has to lead this effort is Anna Galland, the executive director of MoveOn.org. MoveOn is a civic action group. You've probably seen there are petitions for progressive causes popping up on social media all the time. It was one of the very first groups to recognize the possibility of online activism starting by email back in 1998. Anna Galland spoke with The New Yorker's Evan Osnos about where the left goes from here and how.
What's so interesting about this moment is we all remember that when Barack Obama was elected in 2008, Mitch McConnell famously said basically that they would do everything they could, the Republican conference, to try to interfere and to obstruct his presidency. And now we find that on the left, there is a similar argument about Trump's presidency. Is there an argument to be said, well, what happened to when they go low, we go high, and trying to figure out some basis for cooperation?
I mean, look, Donald Trump lost the national popular vote by 3 million votes. He has no mandate, and he's going to be trying to do the most extreme things in recent memory. And I think it's not just a policy problem. Really, we're talking about, are we going to make it through the next 4 years with our constitutional democracy intact? That's the level of conversation we need to be having. Mm. We need to not just block Trump's policy agenda. We need to have a clear movement-grounded strategy to survive the Trump era with our constitutional democracy and civil liberties intact. The order of the day here is to first stand up and project a clear moral opposition to what he's proposing to do to our country. That's actually pretty simple. It's just make sure that people hear and see from people that they can relate to that I disagree with what this man and his administration are proposing to do to us. I'm standing up. I'm being visible.
What about the argument, though, that if Donald Trump, in fact, wants to do things that are consistent with what liberal groups would want to see accomplished, for instance, a big infrastructure push. Is there, what's the argument against cooperating in that sense? I mean, is there room to work with him on things where you might have some shared objectives, even if you might object to him on the level of values and the things that he ran on in the campaign?
I mean, there's both a moral case and there's a practical case against cooperating with Trump on basically anything. The moral case is you can't play footsie with a white supremacist. You just can't get into a situation where you think that you can work with him on some bill but then look the other way when he's trying to deport millions of Americans or block an entire world's religion from entry into the United States. So there's a moral case that's just you can't go there. You can't be in bed with this guy. But then I think the practical case is there's no way that an infrastructure bill or any other initiative from Trump is really going to advance progressive values. There's just no way. Maybe we'll get like 3 jobs out of it for communities that are looking for jobs. Maybe we'll get a few roads repaired. But at the end of the day, it's going to be a giveaway to billionaires and investors and not the kind of initiative that really is what we desperately need, which is, yes, a progressive populist infrastructure bill for the people, not for billionaires. We do need that, just not Trump's flavor of it.
One of the critiques of progressive politics at this moment is the sense that it is too easy to simply forward something or to sign it online by clicking on it and to feel as if you've taken a meaningful action for your values. And you've thought about this more than anybody else really in this business. You've been working on this for more than a decade. How do you square that problem of whether or not clicking on a petition or signing something online constitutes meaningful, you know, sacrifice in service of your moral commitments?
That's a great question. So my thought on petitions is always it's a step in the direction of the road we have to be traveling together. It is not the end of the story. It's not actually much of a sacrifice, although it is for some people who feel like making a political statement is uncomfortable for them. It is for some people a step forward. But I mean, the frame I almost want to use for it is necessary but not sufficient. It's necessary for you to connect with communities that share common values. A petition is one way to do that, and it's one way that we can build big groups of people who share some common moral commitments, right? So the petition, what it does functionally, as the person who runs Move On, what I can tell you is when you sign a petition, one thing that happens is we have a way to follow up with you and tell you, hey, there's a mass day of action that you can be part of that has this theory of change that will connect with these inside decision makers. And by being visible to the media and to each other and to decision makers, we have a chance of swaying the outcome. So the petition is like a door through which you can walk into a room where you're in conversation with other people who share your values. And I do think one challenge that groups like Move On face right now is finding new ways to put our members in touch with each other so that they're not just signing petitions and then thinking that they're done, but really entering a meaningful conversation about what we do from here. And I think that the level of creativity and the level of peaceful direct action that's going to be required in the days ahead is such that I want people to take that gateway drug. I want you signing those petitions because that is a way that you're putting your marker down and saying, I believe this. I believe this with a lot of other people, and now let's move to action together.
As we talk about digital organizing in this day and age and also protests, it's worth remembering that there was a time when there was a much more demonstrative, more vigorous kind of public protest when you had, for instance, activism around AIDS, when people went and literally laid down in the lobby of the FDA. I mean, what's the prospect for, the need for a much more vigorous kind of activism today?
Yeah, boy. I think if you look actually at an example that's a little orthogonal to the Trump moment, although clearly the Trump moment relates to everything we care about, but if you look at what just happened around Standing Rock in North Dakota, I think that's a really interesting case of how frontline direct action is going to characterize the protests and the fights ahead. That was an incredible example of people power winning. They won. We won. Move On members, signed petitions. They made phone calls. They've contributed $100,000 directly to the tribe from small donor donations. So we're proud to have been part of it, but it was a much broader moment that happened there where, led by Native American activists, tribes, supported by environmental activists, veterans, and others, a direct action with people putting their bodies on the line helped to drive policy in a different direction than it was headed. And I do think that's an example that we should keep in mind as we look at the days ahead.
One of the questions that I hear a lot these days is whether people say, frankly, that the Democrats and progressives have been too gentle, frankly, in the course of the last few years, and whether there's something they should be learning from the NRA, whether they should be learning things from anti-abortion groups. What do you make of the argument that, in fact, there are some political arts that have been perhaps that have not been taken up as forcefully as they could?
So your question is, are there dark arts that progressives and Democrats have not yet learned that we should be embracing?
Right. Your words, not mine. But I'm genuinely curious whether you see. I mean, there's an argument to be made that the NRA is the most effective political organization in the country today, whether or not you agree with their policy objectives.
I do think we need to be fierce and fiercely committed to our values. And I do think we need to be creative. And I do think we need to be unrelenting sounds a little scary, but I think we need to be totally dogged and committed to the organizing a mass resistance, a mass peaceful resistance that can stand up to the gravity of the threat that our democracy faces. Does that mean I don't know if that means I want to hire seedy lobbyists in state capitals who go around throwing money at legislators, but maybe all of that except for the seedy part is needed. I think that what can we learn from the NRA? I guess I would say we can learn that big money can buy some things, but people power is often still stronger. There have been victories by gun control groups, even in the age of a completely out of control NRA at the state level in particular. And I think we're just going to have to keep being creative and dogged, and we're going to have to figure out how we use people power in strategic ways that wedge the Republican base against itself where we can.
I'm curious, when you look at the Democratic Party today, or you look across politics generally, are there people, are there names that really excite you? I mean, let's be blunt here. If you look at the leadership of the Democratic Party, there are a lot of people of an older generation. Bernie Sanders is 75. Joe Biden is 73. Elizabeth Warren is 67. Where do you see the future of the party, and who are you excited about?
There's a real need to build up the pipeline right now, and I do think that needs to be a priority for progressives across the country. We need to be surfacing new talent, investing in up-and-coming leaders, and building the bench so that we have someone ready to go who's an inspiring, movement-connected candidate in as we get ready for 2020. And I think that work is already beginning. There are.
But can I gently interject here and note that you didn't name anybody?
So Pramila Jayapal, let me give you one example. Yeah, it's a good challenge. I guess I just want to say that because I don't think I have enough names to give you right now, and that's a problem. Pramila Jayapal is one. Lucy Flores is one. There are leaders across the country. Of course, Elizabeth Warren is someone that Move On members were thrilled about and invested in early. But there are others who are up and coming, and we're going to need more.
Anna Gallen, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate the work you do.
That was Evan Osnos talking to Anna Gallant.